But if there isn't trust in the team or psychological safety, or if there's a running narrative that's based on ego fears, that's going to hold them back from delivering on any of those more tangible aspects of team performance.
Welcome to the Grow Tribe. Hi, I'm Melissa McGowan, and I love that you're choosing growth. In this podcast, we shine a light on the diverse, messy, and real ways that you grow in leadership and life. We reflect, connect, and share what growth means to us. After 2 decades supporting growth in business, and of course my own, I firmly believe that where you go with your energy, time, focus, money, and precious resources, you actually grow. We're better together, so stay curious, stay awesome, join our tribe, and feel alive. Thanks so much for being here and being part of the Grow Tribe. It would be amazing if you shared this podcast with others at home, at work, gave it a rate and review in Apple Podcasts, and shared any ideas about what you want to hear more about or who you want to hear from. I love to hear your updates. If you're interested in learning about how to become a Chief Energy Officer, you're looking to fuel your impact and your performance, could be you, could be your team, have a look at the link in the show notes about where to start. And as always, drop me an email if you're looking for any support or you've got any insights that you want to share on growth. It's Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, at gotogrow.com.au. Thanks, everyone. So, which is your favorite team? I know we're not supposed to have favorites, but which tribe gives you energy and behaves in a way that makes you better, where you get that sense of winning? And what about the drainers? So, recently, we've had many experiences, one of which is, you know, the team pulled together. They rose to the challenges. Many of us marched out of our offices with PCs and maybe that office desk chair. And as I was just discussing with my guest, hopefully those, the headset, because they were sold out globally. And we went on a mission to focus on what was most important, to just keep our businesses running, to keep our teams afloat, to manage health and safety, find the people to do perhaps the work because the business was going gangbusters, or maybe it was about retaining jobs. Either way, we pitched in and we went hard and it was going really well until we became so tired. And suddenly things became a little bit disjointed around who was doing what and people just frankly being sick of Zoom. So some of us have lost the teamy vibe and it started to feel more like survival, to be honest. But now there's this wonderful chance for some teams to reconnect. And so here's what I'm hearing. One person got so overexcited at the first time of the team got together in a year that they drank too much too quickly and had to be driven home by another team member. Someone else was meeting the team for the first time because they'd just joined the organization over this past year. Someone else was anxious about that, like, social reconnection and actually being back around these people that we really know well, but we haven't had face-to-face contact with and true social connection in some time. And of course, someone else just could not stop talking about, are we going back into the office or not? And how many days? And do you agree with what they're saying? So all of this is going on. And we know, and I think it was, you know, David Brent back in the old fantastic show, The Office, you know, there's no I in team, but gee, there's plenty of me's. And in my work over the years, I think about all of these bright, talented individuals that we pull together in teams. And presumably we're chasing some sense of shared goals. Yet I know what keeps a lot of people and culture leaders and coaches and leaders in business very busy is the fact that that is a real kind of journey and a process for team. It's not something that just happens. And the analogy I will use is, well, three of my kids currently still playing basketball. And I have watched those teams really develop from a young age. And I think back to the early years of basketball, and it's just, I mean, it's funny to watch, but it's a great metaphor for a team. You're going the wrong way. You're supposed to be dribbling in the opposite direction. So they sort of head down to the, you know, the other team's goal. You've got that player who hogs the ball and dribbles all the way down without passing, despite the coach shouting, pass, pass. Then you've got the clumping up issue where there's a whole court, but the whole team are clumped up in one little, you know, corner, always looking for the ball. When someone comes on the bench, they're not sitting with the team. They're sitting with their family or their mates over to the side. And when it is quarter time or half time, no one's really listening to the coach anyway. So all of this is going on, and it's going on in our lives, our teams and our organisations. And I think what we're experiencing is a sense of feeling really ready and, in fact, craving the re-energising that can come from being part of a really effective team. Recognising we're all humans right here, we're having really different experiences, but that craving of connection and the source of energy that we can get from teams is a real thing for us. And that we can be connected with each other in our teams that we work, you know, on and with. When I know we're members of many teams, but our work teams can be such a sense of connection, and we can be effective and do great work at the same time. But, oh, we're tired. We're just tired. All that action taking, that responsiveness that we kind of went into last year has had implications for us. I read a McKinsey study recently about overcoming the pandemic fatigue, and I don't want to harp on the burnout thing, but that showed that 75% of employees in the US and close to a third here in Asia Pacific had reported the symptoms of burnout. And I think one of the ways that we're going to be able to re-energize our teams and our organizations is really harnessing the power of being in an effective team. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Now, I did touch on teams. Well, I've touched on teams a number of times in the podcast. Back in episode 31, I went through an exercise. I leveraged Patrick Lencioni's work and talked about some of the things we could do back then during last year just to check in with our teams and have a bit of a health check. But we're going to go into that a little bit more today with my guest. Just briefly, I'm going to read out a podcast review that has popped up this week, Care of the Grow Tribe. Thank you. It's great to have you all here. And this is from Trixie Star V. And that person, I don't know if it's a he or a she, doesn't really matter. But that person says a great mix of, well, it says, sorry, first of all, growth from all angles, a great mix of topics relating to growth, and an interesting and diverse guest list. Great stuff. You know that we're all about real, messy, and diverse growth here. And I know many of you are on teams, many of you lead teams. So I'm really pleased today to be joined by Dr. Pauline Lee, who is an organizational psychologist. She's an exec coach and is a practicing team coach. Very helpful for today. She specializes in exec coaching and developing senior leadership teams. I know she loves running. She loves cocktails, not at the same time. And she has an awesome Irish accent. Pauline, our teams need you now more than ever. You know, we know that masks were never a great metaphoric leadership prop, and now we're navigating masks upon masks. Team effectiveness, or teams doing great work and enjoying it, that's not a new topic. That's always been a key for leaders to be able to truly unlock more in their organizations. But gee, now more than ever, isn't this the win-win that organizations might need to just step back a little bit to actually take advantage of? So, Pauline, welcome to the Grow Tribe.
Thank you, Melissa. It's fabulous to be here with you, chatting about one of my absolute favorite topics, you know, harnessing the collective intelligence of our groups and working with teams. So lovely to be here.
Fantastic. And how are you and your team this morning? How's your morning been?
Oh, it's been great, actually. Today is school photo day in my kids' primary school. So I spent an hour doing their hair. They're now at an age 8 and 10, where they want their hair straightened and French braids and the whole thing happening. So it was quite the beautifying morning, actually. And that I preceded that with an hour run in the trail. So I always start most of my mornings with a run in the lovely forests close to where I live.
Yeah, great. So, Pauline, I like to dive in and get pretty personal quickly in this podcast and hear about you and your superpowers. But first, I'd love to ask you, when do you feel really alive in your life?
Oh, I love that question. It's a question I often ask of my clients. I'll answer it from two perspectives. One from actually a work perspective, and I think I'm most energized and in the zone at work where I'm actually doing some sort of development, whether it's with teams or individual leaders. But within that development, when I'm in flow, there's a balance between my ability and the task at hand. So I'm on the edge, but not enough where I'm really stressed out and full of anxiety, but enough where I'm leaning into a stretch, like there's optimal tension there for me. And in development work, I'm getting some sort of immediate feedback that is, where it feels intrinsically rewarding. Like there's some shift happening. It might be very, very small in the fact that the client is listening, it's hearing something, it's seeing something that it may not have seen before. Or just even giving them the space to reflect and slow down. So there's some sort of feedback. And I think probably the other criteria that helps me feel really alive in those development moments is I actually feel purposeful, and I'm almost lost in myself. I'm lost in the work, and I'm purposeful in that I'm doing something that's just bigger than myself. It's helping that person, that team, be something, a better version, or show up a little bit differently, whatever it is. So it just feels like I'm contributing. So, and there's lots of different interventions that do that, but that's just a kind of an umbrella, that I'd put over it that helps me be in flow at work. And then if I translate some of those conditions for being alive to my personal life. Like, I feel so alive on a Saturday morning when I run with the mums from Warrandyte here on the trails, and I'll almost forget that my legs are moving or my feet are pouncing. I'll just feel the wind kind of whistling in my face, and I'm absorbed in the conversation with them. I don't even notice we've been out for 2 hours. So that for me feels alive. It feels like there's just a lovely flow of energy and life. And then also, I mean, with my family, and there's absolutely days where I don't feel alive. They're draining my energy. But there's so many times when, the girls are just doing the most beautiful things, or, James has been that wonderful husband, and it just, we're in the zone. So there'd be some of the things that come to mind this morning.
Love it. Love it. And there's such a connection that I'm picking up in some of the themes over time as people answer this question around the work they do and, purpose. Okay, we hear that word a lot, but that the rewards that they get from the work that they do and how energizing that is, and these things sort of, come together, which I love. But you mentioned something there about teams, being something. I'm wondering if we can segue into helping us just first break down kind of this concept, of team and what it means to be a great team, because we keep reading about, you know, the skills that we need at scale at the moment, adaptability and resilience. And, you know, it can get quite overwhelming of like, well, what are we trying to be right now? So, yeah, perhaps just start us off with some basics around this concept of team. That'd be great.
I've been taught by Peter Hawkins in the last couple of years. I've been doing a lot of his studies, and you know, the one thing that really sticks out for me, and I'm seeing it in my practice, it is the purpose that creates the team, not the team creates the purpose. And so, you know, a team is a collection of individuals that need to come together because they're there to create something that they can't do apart. They're there to deliver on a purpose, deliver value to their stakeholders collectively that they can't do in their individual roles. And so with that then, you know, once they're clear on what their shared purpose is, the team, you know, a team is an individuals that have a shared purpose, have a common approach to working together, you know, have common goals for which they are mutually accountable for. And the key word in the definition of a team is shared, common, collective. And so that's where you're going to get the exponential benefits of a team, because they're doing that together that really they cannot do in their respective functional roles. So that's a fairly textbook definition. And in fact, one of the, you know, I think we all keep coming back to it. It was, God, if I can think of, it'll come to me. Kazabak that wrote The Wisdom of Teams. And they talked about the common approach, the shared values, common goals, shared KPIs, shared purpose, which is foundational to being a team, which is different to a working group. You know, a working group comes together where they are working together to support each other in their respective roles. And they're sharing information, providing updates, helping each other in decision making, but it's in service of their own individual goals. And that's the key difference. And I think many teams in organizations are more working groups. They're a team of leaders rather than a leadership team. And they are fundamentally very different. One's not bad or good, because working groups serve a purpose. You know, they work for particular initiatives like task forces or committees. But teams, we know from the research, are significantly correlated to higher levels of effectiveness and in turn business performance.
So that's really the case, isn't it, for being more intentional if you are trying to be a team about doing some of this work, because in my experience, it doesn't just evolve because someone, you know, they come together and say, well, we're going to act as a team. So I love what you're saying there about if we're a team, then we are having a greater collective impact than we could if we were trying to do this apart. So it makes a lot of sense. Yet there can be that real tension between, you know, the individual sort of what the individuals bring and what the team's about. So how might people think about stepping into and really, I guess, even assessing for themselves, is my team actually clear on what it is about and what we're trying to do here? So maybe share a little bit of the how with us.
Over the years, I've been brought in to help a team when there are relationship issues. So there's something troubling about the dynamics, and often there could be a strain in the relationship between two people. So that's often the brief. Or someone might say, or a client might say, I've got a great bunch of individual leaders, but I think they could be more effective. So it's often quite vague. So the starting point in discovering where a team, you know, or a group of individuals need to focus on, it always has to be with the first step, which is what I call inquiry and discovery. And that first piece is using some sort of diagnostic, which could be a Team 360 or could be any number of instruments that will help you understand the dynamics, the performance levels, the, you know, how clear the team is on who they are and what they need to be working on together. And then also I would conduct interviews with each member of the team and external stakeholders to ascertain where are the strengths and where are the focus areas. So that's the first piece in terms of how, at the very practical level, to at least, you know, to diagnose or to get an assessment of where the development areas are. But one of the things I have learned the hard way over the last decade is that the importance of not going in as the expert and saying this is your diagnosis, you know, these are your strengths and these are your weaknesses. In fact, the team coaching work happens when we go in with a co-inquiry mindset, which is getting them to make sense of the data that's collected, the 360, whatever the sponsor is saying, getting them to explore it and digest it and make meaning of it. And then that moves into them co-designing, co-creating their team development plan that would typically go for a whole year. So it's theirs. It's not the consultant going in and suggesting or recommend. We would give recommendations, but not going in as the expert, going in as truly a partner in the coaching and supporting their development. And from that, you see there, it's creating ownership and commitment to their own development path.
Maybe just share with us whether it's some examples or some thoughts around the accelerators on this sort of journey of a team and some of the areas where they can really get stuck and where it tends to be more challenging.
I was working with this finance leadership team in one of the big departments in federal government, and the CFO at the time, this has gone back a few years ago, pre-COVID, was receiving a lot of negative feedback about how the leadership team was being experienced by its stakeholders. And they also had a lot of external factors like being under-resourced and under budget and low engagement. And he, the CFO himself, had a feeling that he wasn't being trusted and he wasn't, his direct reports, his team members were not being candid and open. But so there was a few red flags that something needed to change. So we began the coaching program with the key steps I just outlined earlier on. And one of the first pieces of work we did, which helped to accelerate the team, was helping them get clear on their mandate. What were they being commissioned to do? What was the, you know, why did the existing team, and what's the value that they were being asked to add to the organization? And it was a breakthrough moment for them when the deputy secretary came into the room and some of their customers, and they said, "We don't want you to be counting beans anymore." Like they were doing a lot of transactional financial work. "We'd like you to be strategically influencing the investment and the spend in the department." So it was a breakthrough moment because now they were being given permission to be a different type of team. Like that's what their stakeholders were asking of them. So their purpose of why they existed a team shifted from doing the transactional work of financial reporting to contributing to the strategic finances of the organization. So that was very helpful in where they were expending their energy and focus and the kind of work that they were directing on their own individual teams. But a few months in, the team, you know, were still feeling stuck. They weren't operating at a level that would warrant, you know, that would speak to a high performing team. In other words, there wasn't a level of transparency, they weren't helping each other out enough, there wasn't enough collaboration, they seemed to be holding back, they were very strong on being distant, you know, something like the 70th percentile with a diagnostic I use, so, you know, really keeping an arm's length from each other. So they were stuck, even though they were clear about what they were, what they needed to be. They weren't behaving in a way that lent itself to high performance. Here's a phenomena that typically can play out when coaching a team. They clarify their purpose, they clarify their strategic direction, they agree on team goals, and then clarify their values and behaviors. And these values are written up and they're posted on the wall, but actually, not an awful lot changes in terms of their behavior back in the shop floor. And this is what was happening with this team. Like, you know, they were thinking about a little bit different, but fundamentally, when they came together in session, they were still holding back. So then I said to myself, something we need to get clear on what's the source of them being distant and not collaborating fully with each other. And
just a quick clarifying question. At this stage of a typical process like you're describing, is the leader of the team also saying, oh, gee, we're seemingly a bit stuck here? Or is it really you sort of from the balcony, if you like, helping with some of those insights and observations that might be harder to see when you're down on the dance floor?
Yeah, it's both. Because as you know, Melissa, there's only so much work we can do when we're in workshops, and there's only so much we can see. So I was seeing a level of tension and courteous compliance, you know, a little bit of we'll go along with the process for the sake of it. But I don't see what's happening outside of session unless I ask the team leader or I get feedback from the team. And so the CFO was not being told what he needed to be told so that he can be successful in representing the team at the executive level. So his team members were being closed, were being distant, were not with him, to put it in a simple way, just were not supporting him as much as they should be. So I came to the conclusion that we need to shine the light on what's actually going on here. And so I asked them, so I'll just talk you through the process, which is really, it's a very powerful process for making the invisible visible when it comes to team dynamics. And I use the collective immunity to change approach to illuminate what is actually holding them back from being the team they want to be in terms of delivering on that purpose. And after we'd done the values and behaviors, I asked them to think about which of those they are you know, traveling well on, and which of those they are struggling with in terms of practicing and living and breathing. And collectively, they said, authenticity, that's the one that they are not strong on. So that then became their team breakthrough goal, to collectively be authentic with each other. And so then I brought,
which I think at that point, you know, okay, if we're wrapping our arms around a behavioral goal, we're really starting to get to the root of things, aren't we? We're not hiding out in process or something else. We're behavior matters, right? It's so important.
Correct. I mean, you can do amazing work as a team coach on the strategy and goals and KPIs. But if there isn't trust in the team or psychological safety, or if there's a running narrative that's based on ego fears, that's going to hold them back from delivering on any of those more tangible aspects of team performance. So this is where you get breakthrough.
That's why I love the Lencioni model. I know it's a bit dated now, and you know there's many other great things out there, but that pyramid always stuck in my mind, that vulnerability-based trust.
To add to your pyramid model by Lencioni, I often use the iceberg model with teams. It's a lovely, accessible way of thinking about everything that's going on that affects team performance. And, you know, the tip of the iceberg, which is just the 10%, is the things that are most tangible to the eye, which are systems and processes and goals and behaviors. And it's the 90% that sits underneath the iceberg, which is our stories, our beliefs, our assumptions, our values, our mindset, that actually is driving all of that stuff on the tip of the iceberg. So the breakthrough work happens in under the waterline, you know, deep in the iceberg is where you're really going to get some movement if a team is stuck there. So once they had agreed, which was in itself a transformative conversation, to agree that authenticity with each other was something that they had to improve on, then I took them through a process to help them see what's keeping them immune from being authentic with each other. And what the collective immunity change process revealed was that, on one hand, they were committed, deeply committed, to being transparent and real and trustworthy and open with each other. But on the other hand, they had a competing commitment to not be hung out to dry and to protect myself from being hung out to dry and being seen as incompetent. So they felt that if they actually shared their mistakes, gave each other feedback, supported each other in the collective endeavor, that would hold them back from their own individual accountabilities. And therefore, they would be seen as incompetent and seen as a failure. And so they had a running big assumption around that. I assume if I was to help more in the team and spend more time on resolving team problems, that'll hold me back from my own individual goals and I'll be punished for it. So only when we illuminated the story that was actually that was generating these behaviors that were not team-like, that were inauthentic, only then could we actually make some progress.
The book, I love that work, Immunity Change. I'll link it in the show notes so people can have a look at that as well.
And so that whole conversation is transformative for a team, because it's a relief that they now can name what's going on at a subconscious level, at the level of dynamics, and also that they have a language to talk about it. They can see, actually, it's my own conditioned stories of what it takes to be successful in as a leader in this organization, or indeed in many organizations, that's holding me back from the teamwork. So then over a period of 6 months, the team engaged in a series of exercise, I call it test and release, where they designed experiments to intentionally change their behavior and to learn about the accuracy of their big assumption. And so those experiments, for example, would be at this particular meeting, we will come prepared to provide input on this shared team task. If I spot a mistake, I'm going to offer feedback. So lots of things around that represents authenticity, like I'm going to be courageous, I'm going to deal with, you know, the more difficult relationship issues by X, Y, and Z. So they ran all these tests. It's not so much just to change the behavior, but really to see if their big assumptions about being hung out to dry and being seen as a failure and being incompetent is up for some modification. And guess what? It was. Because they found actually when they engaged in authentic type behaviors, they weren't hung out to dry. In fact, their team members were more engaged and more supportive and more interested. And so then over time, authenticity became a norm, a new way of working, and they got some distance from an assumption, a story that was limiting their effectiveness. And that for me is a breakthrough in a team, because they're breaking away from a habit and a pattern of thinking that's not serving them well. You know, it's individually challenging because it calls into question your own identity. You know, what do I identify within this team? And as you said in your opening, you know, there's no I in team, there's no me in team. But in many of these leadership teams, that's what they're identifying with, protecting myself. I keep myself safe by focusing on my own individual accountabilities primarily. But in true teams, the focus has to be on wearing the team hat as well as the individual role hat. You have to wear both. And most of the time, the priority should be on the team goals.
And it's assured, isn't it? Because I think the ego and the brain, I mean, it does keep us safe, and it does a pretty good job of it. So, Pauline, just to round us out, and I love this topic and, you know, could talk about it all day, but as we said at the start, leaders are, they've got full plates right now, and there's this tension between the short-term need to deliver, particularly at this time of year, you know, setting ourselves up for success, and the longer-term knowledge that, yes, of course we all agree that we want our teams to be humming and doing great work together and enjoying it. But how can we add something to the list and get them to think about where might this dynamic be right now? As you were saying before, our brains are, they're geared to keep us safe. And we know that whilst, you know, we should, and I think you use that word should, be focused on the collective good so that we can deliver those shared outcomes, we can orient and default consciously and subconsciously to protect ourselves. And I'm sure we've all done that. I'm sure many of us have sat in teams and we've seen others do that, and we've experienced the implications of that. So I guess my final question is, what one thing would you leave us leaders to think about or to help influence us to put the team development, you know, back on or on the list right now as something that's going to help us short and long term?
Mm-hmm. So I'll leave you with three basic ideas, which I use when I'm speaking to clients about exploring team development work. The very first one is to ask the leader, the team leader, how's your team traveling? And he or she will likely say, oh, they're good. We're you know, kicking some goals. The feedback seems to be very good. And then I'll go, so how do you know that your team is collectively performing well? Like, how do you know? And they'll often struggle to answer that question because invariably they haven't really been asking their stakeholders for feedback on the value they are collectively providing to them. Or what are their expectations? Or how are they getting in the way? So that helps to, it's a point of reflection for them, because a lot of organizations are feedback poor. There's a deficit in the feedback culture. So that's one entry point. The second one is that when leaders say, yeah, we're doing okay, but we all need to find more time to sleep, I'll often pull out a piece of research. And there's very compelling research now from the Scaling Leadership book that was written by Bill Adams and Bob Anderson, where they explored what's the level of reactivity and the level of creativity from their database, which has 190,000 leaders in it. And what they've found that in executive leadership teams, 50% of the team members of that team are either mid to highly reactive. In other words, they are using high control tactics to achieve results, or they are emphasizing protection over engagement, or emphasizing caution over taking risks, or they're being too compliant. It manifests very differently, you know. So they're half of them are close to mid or high reactive, and the other half are mid to high creative. So if that's a representative sample of leadership teams around the world, and I'll show this to them and I'll say, so begs the question, how effective is your leadership team? Is the collective intelligence, the collective performance more or less than the average intelligence of your, or the average capacity of your individual team members? And so, because what we're trying to do is help them see what they don't see, or they're so absorbed in the day-to-day delivery. And then the third angle I might take is, where are you spending your time? And most of them will say, the most immediate thing in front of me. And so we always think about high-performing teams. There are three horizons to be focused on. And so the first horizon is the day-to-day tasks. The second horizon is thinking about tomorrow and innovating for tomorrow. So that would be continuous improvement efforts. And the third horizon is, you know, looking outward 1 or 2, 3 years in time. And when I ask team leaders to think about what percentage of you and your team, where are you spending your time, they'll say 100% on horizon one, maybe 10% on horizon two. But what it says to them, actually, we're just getting better at playing today's game. We're not actually getting better for innovating for the future. And so they're not putting themselves in a position to be adaptable and future fit because they're being highly reactive. So I'll use a couple of different angles like that to wake them up to what is possible, to wake them up to there's another way of being, there's another way of working as a team.
Yeah, and as you said, like the environment that we're operating in, like things have changed so much anyway, and so even if we're really great, like horizon one is different than what it's been. And so what a great time, what a great case study to take that leap of faith as a leader, because if you haven't felt what that can feel like when you can get out of there, but just knowing there are people like you and others around who have expertise and superpowers to partner on a journey like that. So what I'm going to leave us all with is that challenge of how are our teams really going and how do we know that that's how they're going? And I love that. Could talk about it all day. Enjoy your teams, everyone. Enjoy your growth in your teams because it is continual and more is possible. And Pauline, thanks so much for being here today. And being with us and your awesome Irish accent and the whole kit and caboodle. You've got an amazing level of expertise and I really appreciate you supporting the Grow Tribe today.
Thank you, Melissa. It was a pleasure.
Thanks so much for being here and being part of the Grow Tribe. It would be amazing if you shared this podcast with others at home, at work, gave it a rate and review in Apple Podcasts and shared any ideas about what you want to hear more about or who you want to hear from. I love to hear your updates. If you're interested in learning about how to become a Chief Energy Officer, you're looking to fuel your impact and your performance, could be you, could be your team, have a look at the link in the show notes about where to start. And as always, drop me an email if you're looking for any support or you've got any insights that you want to share on growth. It's Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, at go2grow.com.au. Thanks, everyone.